So anyway, thanks again to everybody who does so much work. Thank you to the musicians for coming here on a Sunday morning to sing with us. As I say, Bill up there on the balcony. It's inspiring to be here. And so today I want to talk a little bit about the bicentennial, and obviously we're going to talk about the pledge drive too. But just the briefest of kind of context, for those of you who don't know, we have a little timeline that's been produced by the Bicentennial Committee. You might see these in the back of the sanctuary. If you'd like one, feel free to take one. We only have a small stack now. We hope to have a bigger stack later, but it kind of shows some of the major events in the history of this building and this congregation, and then has our mission and vision and our principles here. And a very cool logo, I must add, designed by Tom. So we were founded in 1825. This building was completed around 1835 and dedicated, it says here, in 1836. And I mean, what that means, I'm no historian, but you know, I look around the congregation, the church here, and you see these little doors on your pews. I don't know exactly what that's about, but my guess is that at least part of it is about warmth. Right? You close yourself in, you bring the dogs, you bring your blankets, and you keep warm during the service, because back in the day, sermons were an hour and a half long, and there was no heating in this building, so it was something. Don't worry, today we're not going to do an hour and a half. Never mind, of course, the reminder about turning off cell phones. This building was in operation as a church before electricity was available to Meadville, so it's that kind of history we're looking at. So for all that time, through the Civil War, through World War I and II, and through all of the various social and political changes that our country's been through, this church has been right here. And as was said earlier, as Mike was saying, that I think deserves celebration. And so we are going to celebrate, and we're going to do that on October 19th, 2025. And we're also going to have a series of services and events that are going to lead up to that date. That's the date for the big hoopla and the banners and the fireworks and all of that. Metaphorically, fireworks. I don't know if we'll literally have them, though. Who knows? Anyway, a series of services leading up to that, including this one today. And the way that we're thinking about this is it's going to be partly about the past, because we have 200 years. We're particularly interested in the last 50 years, because there's actually quite a bit written about this church in its early years, the first century. There's a book, and there's various other papers that are written. There's not as much about the last 50 years, and many of you in this congregation, actually, all of you in this congregation have been here in the last 50 years, including today. So we're going to be reaching out to people. Amelia Carr is the chair of the Bicentennial Committee. We're going to be reaching out to people to hear your stories, and if you have things you'd like to talk about and like the church to know, your little piece of your experience in this church, anytime you've been here, please see me or see Amelia. We would love to hear from you. And if you'd like to be a part of planning the bicentennial celebrations, please see Amelia. We're taking volunteers always. But it's only a little bit about the past, because really, that's the 200 years and counting thing of the title of the service, we're really thinking about the future and how do we build a sustainable future for our congregation? And I think we really can't talk about that without talking about why we're here in the first place. Why does this church need to be here? Why are you here? Why am I here? Why did we end up in this particular place on this particular day? And so I want to reflect a little bit about that before I go on to talking about more mundane, though essential, members issues like money. So I don't know why you come to church, so I can really only talk from my own perspective. But as I reflect on the question of, you know, what's it about? What is church about? I kind of think about three different levels. One is sort of the level of our feelings and yearnings and the kind of intrapersonal kind of life that we're living and what we want from that. Then there's the level of our connections with each other, and then there's the connections of our role in society and how we're going to act out our faith. So regarding the personal, I mean, I think it's not news to anybody that for many people, not everybody, but for many people, there is a kind of there's some sort of a draw or a resonance with it's hard to put into words. It's the ineffable, the ungraspable, the part of life that somehow seems very real to many of us, but you can't actually sort of touch or see. You might think about this as a sort of the religious impulse or our attempts to connect, like it says in our hymnal, with transcending mystery and wonder. And there are lots of different kinds of people in the world, so there are lots of ways in which this is felt and expressed. I was doing a research project when I first got here in Meadville a long time ago, where I was talking to people about their religious experience, and I talked to a guy from Cambridge Springs who would have conversations with Jesus in his truck. He'd drive around, and to him, Jesus came and sat right with him in the truck, and they had these conversations. And it was like, wow, that's kind of cool. I mean, it was a living, breathing faith for him. Now, for other people, it's not perhaps so personal, and the kind of the ineffable is not expressed so concretely. Some people experience that kind of connection when you see a sunset, or with the leaves that are out there, or looking at the stars and kind of trying to fathom, how is this even possible? You know, what they tell me about how far those things are, or that somehow I'm looking at light that comes from a million years in the past or a billion years in the past. How does that even work? Other people feel it in the symmetry of kind of mathematical equations and the way it all seems to work out. And other people find it in the rituals of communion, for example, or of prayer. And some people don't feel that impulse at all. One of the most famous ones that I know about is William James. William James is an American psychologist. I don't know if you know him, but he wrote a book, very, very influential book at the beginning of the 20th century on the varieties of religious experience. And he went out and interviewed a lot of people who had all different kinds of religious experiences, and he did this because he couldn't have them himself. He wanted to experience the transcendent mystery and wonder and awe, but it just wasn't there in him, except when he was breathing nitrous oxide, which is part of a long human history of opening up to the transcendent by using chemicals to change your brain. That's not new. A lot of people have been doing that. He did too. He wrote an essay about it. You can find it on the web. It's great. Just type in William James, nitrous oxide. And it's pretty entertaining. But I love also that he was so curious. If you've seen Ted Lasso, it's that same line, you know, be curious, not judgmental. He didn't judge people for having experiences he couldn't have. He wanted to understand them. So he talked about them with people. Anyway, the point of all this is that you and I each have our own individual draw, but that draw to connecting with what's kind of really, in some sense, real beyond just the immediate is a very common human experience. And I think that's one of the things that draws us to a place like this that is dedicated to that kind of experience and exploration. But spirituality is not just all about the individual religious experience, because if it were, we'd all be in the forest or in the cave meditating in the eternal bliss of the universe. Works for some people, but for most of us, there's something about connecting with other people that's important, about connecting to all of that as it's expressed as individual human beings. Now, I know, of course, that there is a purely social element to our getting together. And there's nothing wrong with that. You come, you see people you know, you are supported by them, you can reach out to them, they help, you're inspired by them. But it's not just a social club, this church. It is something different. And I think the reason it's different is that when we get together, there's at least the possibility or the promise that you can open up to that deeper level of being that's in you and that's in other people that you can somehow kind of connect with if you're willing to be that open. Sometimes it's the tenderness of feeling, sometimes it's fear, sometimes it's, you know, awe or whatever that it is, that you know that is welcomed here and it's a part of the experience. It's understood whether we talk about it or not, whether we make a big deal out of it or not, we understand that's a part of what's possible. And that's why, as I mentioned earlier, why singing in church, for me, I can't speak for my fellow musicians here, but why it's so different than when we perform in other places. I mean, there's nothing wrong with performing out in other places, in restaurants and bars, and it's very fun. You know, but when we sing Crazy Little Thing Called Love in a bar, it's, you know, it's Freddie Mercury's little ditty. It's fun. It's nice. It's uplifting. It's kind of fun. In here, though, I hear it differently. It's like, crazy little thing called love. You know, it's like, what's up with that? I mean, the first things that come to mind are, well, this thing called love, I just can't handle it. The first line of the song. So it makes me think about the nature of love. It's like, yeah, it can be really overwhelming. I mean, if you really love somebody, it can make you crazy to think about losing them. Or if they're climbing up a ladder or doing something like driving a car like our kids do all the time, it can be frightening. It makes me think about also the mystics. You know, the mystics are people whose religious bent is towards a direct connection to the divine, not mediated by a priest or by a ritual, but really just, okay, let's just see how I can reach out to what's there. And they often speak about just how overwhelming it is to have that direct connection. There's so much awe and sometimes fear that you'll feel like you'll just disintegrate or you'll just lose it in some way because it's so awesome in the kind of original sense of the word. They talk about the humility that they get when they're faced with that grandeur of the universe, of God, of however they conceive of it. And that reminds me of the spiritual seekers who have gurus and who see the guru as the instantiation of the divine, and how they talk about how they want to get close to the guru because they want to be transformed by that heat, but that if they get too close, they get burned. That's kind of the standard line about that. It's like, oh yeah, that's kind of the same thing. And then, which of course makes me think of Icarus, right? Flying too close. I mean, anyway, the point is you could do an exegesis on Crazy Little Thing Called Love all day. And I would in here. I wouldn't out there. But here, it opens me up. Being in this room opens me up to new kinds of experiences, even of things that are everyday. And of course, you know, here we do our ritual of sharing joys and sorrows, which I love because, you know, we sit and somebody shares, and whatever they share, it sets up a resonance in us. Like, oh yeah, my pain, my sadness, my joy, my fear of feeling these things, all of this stuff, it's kind of real. People come here and they speak from the pulpit and they talk about their experiences, and we sit out there and we're like, we open ourselves to that. And that's why, as I said, even if we know that we're not going to speak a joy or a sorrow because it's just too tender, or we don't even really know what it is, we're just kind of feeling whatever, and we can't quite verbalize it, we know that we can bring it here and it can be met. Not in every moment, not by every person. We're all regular human people, but we know that that's always a possibility. And then, of course, we take our values and our ethics and our religious sentiments and we live in the world. Sometimes we do that as a collective, like we did with the Chilling on Chestnut thing, and we become part of the community. Sometimes we take it into our own lives, where we use our money, where we use our volunteer time. But we take that with us. So it's not something that just happens here, but it echoes into the world. So for me, what the really interesting thing about all this is that intrapersonal level, the inner level, the sort of social level, and the societal level, they're all operating at every moment together here in this church at once. That's why this is a unique kind of place. And the fact that so many generations, starting with the people whose names you see on the wall here, they've been coming here with that intent, with that promise for so long, I think makes this space into something, you know, something different, kind of a, in the New Age terms, it's a vortex of energy. You know, there's a sort of a sense about this place. Or, if in more traditional language, it's a sanctuary. It's a sanctuary. It's a place where you can come and get renewed. You can get some of that sustenance that you need. It's a really tough time in the world. I'm sure many of you, all of you, have things going on in your lives, in your families, in your bodies, that are tough to deal with. There's things going on in the world that are really tough to deal with. this is a sanctuary. It's a place where we can get some sense of respite, at least for a brief time, that helps us kind of come back into our lives. I think that's really important. And I know from some of you talking with you, people have different ways of doing that. Some people just come into this building and they just sit, just hang around in this space and see what it feels like. Some have the privilege of standing up here and looking out at you and seeing all these people who are so inspirational, you know. And I could name every one of you for, you know, that I know for something that I'm inspired about. A couple, of course, I would just say, like, Bill's up there all the time making this thing happen. Joyce and Mike drive in from the edge of the known universe to be here. Yeah, I mean, you know, there's so many, without Dave over there, you know, the building would have fallen down long ago, you know. So there's, you know, I mean, there's so many of you who've done so much. It fills me. It keeps me going. As I approach my third or fourth or 800th year on the board, you know, it's like, oh, why do I do this? Well, I do it because of you, you know. I'm inspired. So there's something about this place, these people, this history, and this promise that helps me keep going. And it's not just about, in some sense, spiritual death. It's also that emotional tenderness that is possible here. And that includes both pain and laughter, joy and sorrow. Now, I know we're not perfect people. But we've been doing this for 200 years. And yeah, Corinne begs to differ on that. Some of us maybe, most of us are not. But we've been doing this for 200 years, and the idea is to continue on. To do that, of course, we're going to need to continue searching in ourselves for what's most alive, what's most real, and what's most precious here, and supporting it. So this place where we come together and where we seek for that communion with each other and those who follow us, you know, that's kind of the light that I hope will shine for us as we move forward into our next 200 years. So may it be. Okay, and the money part. You knew this was coming. I sent you an email earlier this week. You know, hopefully you read it. I don't know how much people read their emails, but any case, every week we offer an opportunity to offer gifts to the church and to the community. We also ask once a year that you fill out a pledge card, which you can see here in your order of service. We're going to talk about that in just a second. We need at least $67,000 this year if we want to continue on the way we're going. If we want to hire a minister, a part-time minister for part or all of 2024, we'll need more. Those are all in your in the email. The board really wants to present a balanced budget to you this year. We have not done that in several years. We promised we would, and now we really want to do that. And so that depends on us. Now, of course, when we ask you for money, we don't ask you to do something that's going to be injurious to yourself. That would be counterproductive. We don't want you to give money that you don't have. But if you're moved to give it and you do have it and you love the feeling of generosity that you get when you do give it, this is going to be a perfect time. Now, sometimes in the past, those of you who've been here a while, you know, sometimes we have a little trifold brochure, and it's got pie charts, and it's got lines, and it tells you how much you're going to pledge if you want to UUA guidelines. We're not doing that this year. Instead, we're going to sing you a song. And that's going to kind of exemplify what the church is all about and what the pledge drive is about. We'll sing that to you in just a minute. And then as we finish, then we'll just kind of vamp a little bit. At that point, the ushers will come forward, and if you have an offering you'd like to make towards this year's pledge or for the community and the Share the Plate, our Share the Plate recipient is Women's Services this month, you can do that. Or if you'd like to turn in your pledge card, you can fill it out now while we're singing or, you know, as we're vamping. You can fill it out. If you don't want anybody to know, you can fold it into 18 little squares, right? You're not required to do this. You're not required to do it now. If you did it now, it would save me the trouble of tracking you down later, which I would love, because, you know, time and energy are precious around here. But again, it's really about you. It's not about me. It's not about us. It's your choice what you would like to offer to this congregation. So,